Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
All right, let's go down to Atlanta, Georgia. We played the Allman Brothers for him. I don't think he heard it, but he is Jason Longshore. He is the color analyst for Atlanta United and a great purveyor of the game in the state of Georgia. Good evening.
Good evening. I appreciate the Allman Brothers every time.
You got to. Who would be your other big-time Atlanta band?
You know, I'm kind of schizophrenic when it comes to music. Like, I'll go just outside of Atlanta and go to Athens and REM. That's my all-time favorite.
Sure.
But I'll also pull up Outkast as well. So I'll go back and
Outkast is good. Yeah. Andre, 6,000, 2,000? What was he? Andre?
3,000.
My producer, Brian McDonald's, holding up three figures. I knew it was something thousand. Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Well, don't forget, Rock Lobster. Is from Athens, too.
Oh, yeah, B-52 is another Athens band.
You know, I ran into the lead singer of B-52s in the parking lot of a Holiday Inn in Athens once. I was out there calling a college game. Kid you not. And he had on a green, sort of iridescent, awesome suit. And I can't remember what his name was, but I had a conversation with him in the parking lot. All right, let's talk about Atlanta soccer right now. How's the preparations going for the World Cup?
It's exciting. We had a big event last week to mark the 1 year out from the tournament getting underway. And it feels like it's still far away, but it's not. Like, it's this weird time span of things happening, but it's still far enough away that you can't quite, like, touch it and feel it yet. But it's getting there. And I think what people are starting to catch up to here is, you know, I remember saying it when the games were announced for Atlanta, that getting eight games and getting the second semifinal, you know, it's going to be like eight Super Bowls in the city. And I think for general sports fans, they're like, oh, no, it can't really be like that, can it? Yeah, it is. And the amount of games that Atlanta's going to have is over a longer period of time than we hosted the Olympics in 1996. It's going to be a huge, huge deal here. They announced the Fan Fest in Centennial Olympic Park, kind of tying everything together 30 years apart. That's very cool. They'll have a number of days of activations around the games here, obviously, but also other days during the tournament. It's going to be treated as a major, major event. And if there's anything that Atlanta has shown over the years it can handle, are these big, major international sporting events.
Now, with a lot of this, there is a lot of the best practices as far as a lot of things go with the markets, and FIFA's got a lot of control on things and the way things are presented. We have that same thing here at seven World Cups. I think that's a great way of, you know, just kind of for the non-soccer person to get an idea of what this could be. Talk about Arthur Blank, the owner of Atlanta United, and the fact that, you know, the U.S. training centers there now, and kind of how that all feeds into the whole picture of the World Cup, Atlanta United, U.S. soccer, all that.
If you study Atlanta history and you go back as the city grew, I mean, when I was a kid growing up here in the 80s, even right around the time that the Olympics were announced for here, so in the late 80s, Atlanta was I think the way it's been described, which I really kind of lean into, is a small town masquerading as a city. And it still keeps that personality a little bit. But if you go back to the history of how it started to become a city and grow out of that being a small town, at first it was Coca-Cola and Robert Woodruff. And if you go around Atlanta, you're going to see the Woodruff name on a number of different things. Ted Turner has had his impact on the city, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the next one in that line of Atlanta figures who have pushed the city forward is Arthur Blank. And he's done it not just in sports, but I think sports has been where he's really made his mark. Getting Mercedes-Benz Stadium built, putting putting soccer front of mind in building that stadium, bringing Atlanta United to life, and doing it the right way in terms of the investments, investing in the academy, getting the academy underway before the team got on the field with the first team, investing in a second team, investing in community, going out and building 100 mini pitches across the state of Georgia over the next decade, the programming to back it up, all those kinds of things. Arthur has, I think he's really, with soccer, he's led with his heart. His kids played the game. So he is passionate about it in a different way than he is about the Atlanta Falcons. And obviously from a business perspective.
But he is deeply passionate about soccer, because I think you told me today when you and I were on the phone, his son played at Elon College.
Yeah. It's a really important aspect to it, because when you have an NFL team, like, it's a business play, and you can be passionate about football, obviously, no problem with that. But I think with soccer, for Arthur, it's family. So it feels different for him, and I think he goes about it in a different way. And being around the club from day one, I've felt that. And the people that I interact with and the people that I work with at Atlanta United, that's always the feeling that I've gotten, is family. And Arthur's always been a huge believer in the city of Atlanta, and I think he's helped take what Robert Woodruff and Coca-Cola and Ted Turner and everything that Turner did from a TV perspective. Arthur took all that and has put it on an even bigger platform. And I think the World Cup doesn't happen without Arthur. U.S. soccer doesn't come here without Arthur. And I don't think Atlanta is poised to be Soccer City USA and one of the great soccer cities in the world without Arthur Blank.
Atlanta United attendance has had to play big, 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 big in getting the World Cup. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a factor. It's definitely a factor in it. And we've talked about it before. I think where I have to always remind people here in Atlanta, and at times remind myself, we're so fortunate to have what we do with soccer in the city, where it's not the redheaded stepchild trying to get noticed. It is part of the mainstream sports conversation.
Soccer in general, or Atlanta United? You're talking about Atlanta United.
You know, it's interesting. Atlanta United is, but I think that, and I hadn't really thought about it until you said that, I think it's changing for soccer in general because of Atlanta United.
Sure.
And I see it with the questions I get from people and things on my radio show on 92.9 The Game, where people will discover soccer through Atlanta United. And then they'll hear about, you know, with Thiago Almada winning a World Cup while he was on the Atlanta United roster. Okay, they wanted to learn about Argentina, and they wanted to follow that. And the World Cup final viewing party was amazing to support Thiago. Those sorts of things, where it's starting to branch out. And I think U.S. soccer coming here is going to have a huge impact on not just Atlanta United, but soccer being bigger in front of mind.
Events, everything. Jason Longshore joining us. He is the color analyst on Atlanta United matches. By the way, I want to go back to your player development and your academy and the investment in that. Is that reaping benefits? How many Atlanta kids have made it through to the first team?
Quite a few. I think the headliners that we've seen, the first one was really George Bello, who I think probably went to Europe 1 year earlier than maybe he should have. Mm-hmm. And he went to Arminia Bielefeld at a really bad time. They went through two successive relegations. But he's landed in a good spot at LASK in Austria, and he's doing well. He might be on the move this summer. But then it was Caleb Wiley. And what's fascinating is you're talking about the same position.
Outside backs. I mean, what are you guys doing down there? You guys know how to develop outside backs.
We got another one coming that they signed to a first-team deal this year, in Dominic Chonqui. It's crazy. Left back has been the position for Atlanta United's academy. But I'll go to what just happened recently, the U.S. U-18 squad that went over to Europe and won a tournament. They beat Argentina in penalties. They beat, I think, France in penalties. They beat Portugal. And you had four Atlanta United Academy players in that team that played significant minutes. One of them, Dominic Chonqui, who's that left back, the next one in line. You had center back Caden Moore. You had a central midfielder, Santiago Pita. they're all on pro deals either with the first team or the second team. Mm-hmm. And then you had Braden Dunham, who has been the late bloomer of the group, still an academy player. He's committed to go to Furman. I don't know if he's going to get to Furman, or if he does, I don't think he's going to be there very long, because he has really come on fast here in the last year or two. And it feels like there's more coming in the younger age groups.
Fantastic. If he goes to Furman, he's going to Clint Dempsey's alma mater. We're talking to Jason Longshore, Atlanta United color analyst. You know, when I hear you talk about players getting through to the first team, that to me is the definition of community. If you are going to be a community team, you have to have players on the field that are from your community. That's, to me, that's kind of a no-brainer. But I know there's different ways of doing it. But
right.
I think that's, you know, you're in 100% rarefied air if you're saying your community, and you got the proof that you're putting players through to the first team.
That has to be part of it. You know, when you go out into the community, and I worked for Soccer in the Streets, a nonprofit that started back in the Atlanta Attack days of indoor soccer in 1989. I worked for them for a decade before Atlanta United, and there's a community play that's a long term of introducing the game in certain communities that haven't had access to it, and that takes a long period of time. But then those kids who you do introduce the game to, they have to have kids that they can relate to that make it to the first team. And when we interviewed Dominic Chongqui after he signed his first team deal, this is a kid who, when we're talking to him, he's like, yeah, I was there for the first game in 2017. And he would have been 9 years old, 10 years old. He's like, I went with my mom, and we went to games all the time. And I wanted to be George Bello, and then I wanted to be Caleb Wiley. And now I'm playing the same position as those guys. It was just amazing to have that conversation with him. That, yeah, he was a kid in the stands dreaming, and it happened for him. And it's just baby steps for him. He's played a couple of games at the first team level this year. He's got a long road ahead of him, but that kind of story, there's kids behind him, and there's kids that are in those stands that see him and say, I want to be the next Dominic Chongqui. That's how it grows.
What's happening outside of the city with the World Cup as far as engaging people and really making the soccer community a part of it?
That's something I'm pushing really hard. We do a lot with my SDH network of going out and calling high school games around the state of Georgia. And, you know, the youth soccer scene at times can be a challenge, because you get into turf wars and you can get into some of the politics of all the different acronyms.
But I mean, Jason, I don't think I asked the question correctly. The committee, the Atlanta Soccer Committee, what are they doing to get the game out and aware organically or through programs to spread the word about, hey, we're a World Cup city in 1 year?
I think it's on a couple of different levels. And part of it is that high school side and schools in general, where Atlanta United and community organizations are starting to have those conversations about, how can we go into a place where the kids are going to be? We can get away from some of the challenges that kids have about transportation and getting to a club. I mean, right now, if you're a kid who lives in the wrong zip code and there's not a good youth club near you, you might not have the chance to play. Okay, we've got to try to change that. How do we do it? We go to schools. That's one initiative that's underway. There's a lot of fields being built and mini pitches being built, which I love. I think is great. I think programs on those is going to be a key area too, that either the community
is
going to have to pick
up.
Is that
funded by U.S. Soccer, or is that all Arthur Blank money?
It's a little bit of both. And there was even another couple of fields that were built here recently that came in through a different funding mechanism that I didn't even know was going to happen. Atlanta United has a fund called GA100, where they're building 100 mini pitches across the state of Georgia, all the way down to Savannah and into South Georgia, and all the way up to near Chattanooga on the side of the Georgia state line. Those are really cool. I think there are about 35 or so that are approved. Not all are finished of those 35 yet. That's going to go through the rest of the decade. But I think the school building, one of the initiatives that was announced last week for the World Cup committee is a partnership with the Boys and Girls Clubs. and soccer programming at 15 different boys and girls clubs around the state.
Jason, I got to cut you off right there because I got to get this in real quick. You got 20 seconds. Tell me why there was limited attendance at the FIFA Club World Cup match that included Chelsea.
3 o'clock on a Monday afternoon. And the second reason, I think, is maybe Chelsea isn't quite as big of a draw as they would like to be. All and right. I thought it showed a little bit yesterday.
There you go. He's the man. He's Jason Longshore. He's the color analyst for Atlanta United, one of my favorite guests on this show. Jason, thanks for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me, as always.
All right. That gives us a little bit of a feel and a bit of a flavor of what's going on in Atlanta, because we're a World Cup city, too, and we're hosting 7 matches, 5 group games, 2 elimination matches. We got a lot going on here in Houston, Texas when it comes to the World Cup. 13 teams are already in, including the 3 host countries, the United States, Canada, and, of course, Mexico. All right, we're going to take a break here. We're coming back with University of Virginia women's coach. He is Steve Swanson. He will be on the show. He's going to talk about Becky Sauerbrunn and her amazing career with the U.S. Women's National Team. Of course, he coached her at Virginia. This is Larkin Poe, Come Into My Kitchen, a very famous blues song. And as we go to break here, we want to remind you about Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713. Call now. They are the presenting sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
That joker got lucky, stole her back again.